A Canticle for Leibowitz.
Alleluia, Alleluia.
Part 6 of a series in 15 parts, adapted from a novel by Walter Miller Jr. A Canticle for Leibowitz. Here continues the chronicle, set down daily by the brethren of Isaac Edward Leibowitz, in their abbey in the desert of the Southwest. Quote, in the year of our Lord 3174, the labors of this community bore their first fruits. For in that year it came to pass that signs and tokens were manifest, how the world might cast off the mantle of darkness, and put on again the armor of light, the light of learning, which all had long rejected, yea, these 1200 years, save only the monks of our order, who in their generations have preserved the writings from of old. Nor had our labor been in vain, for in the world there were some now once again who esteemed knowledge and valued understanding, to whom the memorabilia of our order were a treasure to be greatly sought. They would seek out Holy Church as a source of knowledge, even as they sought out kings and governors as a source of wealth. Still it was an age of strife, and the tribes warred often, and every man's life might hang on the word of his prince, and if peace was established, none could say it would last. Unquote.
I was sitting there with
a party at the court of King Hannigan II. The papal representative, Monsignor Marcus Apollo, is present. Apollo is convinced war is imminent. King Hannigan's messenger has returned with his skin intact from a mission to the tents of Mad Bear. Supposedly, the emissary's mission had been to tell Mad Bear that the civilized states at Hannigan's urging had entered into an agreement concerning disputed lands, and would hereafter wreak stern vengeance on Mad Bear for any further raiding activities. But no man carried such news to Mad Bear and came back alive. Therefore, Apollo concluded, the ultimatum had not been delivered, and Hannigan's emissary had gone out to the plains with a different purpose. Apollo picked his way politely through the crowd to his clerk, Brother Clarence.
Brother Clarence, I just overheard some interesting news. Sarkle came back alive.
Oh?
I take it you understand the implications.
Oh, yes, Monsignor. It means the agreement was a fraud, and Hannigan intends to
shh again. Later.
Do you have a...
Well done, Taddeo. I thought you shunned these gatherings. What could be so special about this one to attract such a distinguished scholar?
Well, you are the attraction, of course.
I?
Yes, they told me you'd be here, otherwise I would...
Care for some punch, Don Taddeo?
No, thank you. Monsignor, I wanted to ask you more about the Leibowitz documents.
Yes.
I had a letter from a fellow named Kornhoer at the Abbey. He tells me they have writings that date back to the last years of the 20th century.
Yes, they're quite authentic, I'm told.
Well, it strikes me as very mysterious that nobody's heard it. Never mind that. Kornhoer lists a number of texts they claim to have, and describes them. Now, I've got to see them.
Oh?
Yes, if it's a hoax, it should be found out. But if it isn't, the data might well be priceless.
I assure you, there is no hoax.
Now, the letter contained an invitation to visit the Abbey and study the documents. They have evidently heard of me.
Not necessarily. They aren't particular about who reads their books, as long as he washes his hands and doesn't deface their property.
I beg
your... But there, then, you have no problem. Accept their invitation, go to the Abbey, study their relics. They'll make you welcome.
And travel through the plains at a time when Mad Bear's clan is...
You were saying?
It's a long, dangerous trip. I can't spare 6 months' absence from the Collegium. Now, I want to discuss the possibility of sending an armed party to fetch the documents here for study.
I'm afraid that would be quite impossible.
Aren't you the Vatican's nuncio to the court of Hannigan?
Precisely. I represent New Rome, not the monastic orders. The government of an abbey is in the hands of its abbot.
But with a little pressure from New Rome...
We'd better discuss it later, Don Taddeo. This evening, in my study, if you like.
I'll be there.
Say 7 o'clock?
Yes, certainly. I'll see you then.
Why didn't you tell him flatly no? Transport priceless relics through bandit country in these times, it's unthinkable, Monsignor.
Certainly.
Well, then why?
Two reasons. First, Taddeo is Hannigan's kinsman.
Second, he started to say something about Mad Bear and then broke off. I think he knows what's going to happen. If he volunteers information, I want to include it in the report you're about to deliver personally to New Rome.
Aye, to New Rome, but what?
It's the kind of thing one doesn't put in writing. If Hannigan's people intercepted such a dispatch, you and I would be found floating face down in the Red River.
What am I to say?
That Hannigan's ambition to unite the continent isn't so wild a dream as we thought. The agreement is probably a fraud by Hannigan. He means to use it to get both the empires of Denver and Laredo into conflict with the Plains Nomads. If Laredan forces are tied up in a running battle with Mad Bear, it wouldn't take much encouragement for the state of Chihuahua to attack Laredo from the south. After all, there's an old enmity there. Hannigan can then march victoriously to Rio Laredo. With Laredo under his thumb, he can tackle both Denver and the Mississippi Republic without worrying about a stab in the back from the south.
Do you think Hannigan can do it, Monsignor?
I don't know. In any case, we must forewarn New Rome of what may be coming. Forewarned, we may be able to keep out of the squabble.
Do you really think so?
Of course not.
Don Taddeo arrived at Marcus Apollo's study as arranged.
Monsignor, I've just come from a meeting of the faculty of the Collegium. We talked about Brother Kornhor's letter and the list of texts.
I take it there was skepticism.
Shall I be polite?
Don't bother.
There was skepticism. Incredulity is more nearly the word. My own feeling is that if such papers exist, they're probably forgeries dating back several centuries. Now, I doubt that the present monks at the Abbey are trying to perpetuate a hoax. Naturally, they would believe the document's valid.
Kind of you to absolve.
Well, I offered to be polite, shall I?
No, go on.
The papers. Now, no matter what we may believe of them, the idea that such documents may still exist intact, even the slightest chance of their existing, is, well, so arousing a thought that we simply must investigate them.
Very well, they invited you. But tell me, what do you find so arousing about the documents?
Are you acquainted with my work?
I must confess, I haven't read a good
deal of Never mind, most of it's highly abstract theories of electrical essence, planetary motion, matters of that sort. Now, Kornhor's list mentions such names as Laplace, Maxwell, Einstein. Do they mean anything to you?
Not much. History mentions them as natural philosophers, doesn't it?
Yes, and that's all anyone knows about them. Physicists, according to our not-so-reliable historians. Responsible for the rapid rise of the European-American culture, they say. Historians list nothing but trivia. I'd nearly forgotten them. But Kornhor's descriptions of the old documents they say they have might well be taken from physical science texts of some kind. It's just impossible.
Why?
Look around you, Monsignor. Can you bring yourself to believe that men today are the lineal descendants of men who invented machines that flew? Who traveled to the moon, harnessed the forces of nature, built machines that could talk and seemed to think? Can you believe that there were such men? Look around you. Tell me if you see the progeny of such a civilization. I can't accept it. How could a great and wise civilization have destroyed itself so completely?
You reject all history, then, as myth?
Oh, no, not reject, but it must be questioned. Who wrote your histories?
The monastic orders,
of course. There, you have it.
Have what?
There was on this continent a more advanced civilization than we have now. That can't be denied. You can look at the rubble, the rotted metal, and know it. You can dig under a strip of blown sand and find their broken roadways. But where is there evidence of the kind of machines your historians tell us they had in those days? Where are the remains of self-moving carts, of flying machines?
Beaten into plowshares and hoes.
If they existed.
If you doubt it. Why bother studying the Leibowitz documents?
Well, because a doubt is not a denial. Doubt is a powerful tool. It should be applied to history.
And what do you want me to do about it, learned Don?
Write to the abbot of this place. Assure him the documents will be treated with care and will be returned after we've examined them for authenticity and studied their content.
Why do you insist you must see them here instead of going to the abbey?
Tell your abbot, if I go to the abbey and find the documents are authentic, my finding won't mean much to others.
You mean your colleagues might think the monks had tricked you into something?
That might be inferred. But also important, if they're brought here, they can be examined by everyone who's qualified to form an opinion. We can't move the entire collegium to the southwest desert for 6 months.
I see your point.
Will you send the request to the abbey?
Yes.
Oh. Good.
But it will be your request, not mine. And it's only fair to tell you, I don't think the abbot, Dom Paolo, will say yes.
When Taddeo had gone, Marcus called his clerk, told him to stop at the Leibowitz Abbey on his way back from New Rome, told him to tell Abbot Paolo, quote, Sheba expects Solomon to come to her. Time seeps slowly on the desert. There's little change to mark its passage. 2 seasons had passed since Abbot Paolo had said no. Now it seemed Sheba was coming to Solomon after all, but unhappy about it, maybe even angry. The abbot paced along the abbey walls at sundown. His thinning hair fluttered in white pennants on the desert wind. His shadow fell across the courtyard, and monks crossing the grounds glanced up at the old man. Their ruler had been moody of late. It was whispered the old man was not well at all. It was whispered that if the abbot heard the whisperers should speedily climb over the wall. The abbot had heard, but it pleased him not to take note of it. He knew the whispers were true. He turned to the clerk beside him.
Read it to me again.
Which one, Dominic?
You know very well which one. The one from Apollo.
Yes, my lord. This is to notify you that Don Taddeo Fardentrot, sage of sages, scholar of scholars, fairhead...
All right. Skip the formalities.
Yes, my lord. Has finally made up his mind to pay you a visit, having exhausted all hope of transporting your memorabilia to this fair realm. He will bring his misgivings and a small party of armed cavalry, courtesy of Hannigan too, whose corpulent person is even now hovering over me as I write, grunting and scowling at these lines, which he commanded me to write. You will remember Hannigan cannot either read or write. He expects me to acclaim his cousin Taddeo in the hope that you'll honor him fittingly. I shall be no less than candid here. So, let me caution you about this person, Don Taddeo. Treat him with your customary charity, Paolo, but trust him not. He is a brilliant scholar, but a political captive of the state. Furthermore, the Don is rather anti-clerical, I think, or perhaps solely anti-monastic. After his embarrassing birth, he was spirited away to a Benedictine monastery, ask the courier about that.
You've heard about his childhood, brother.
Oh, no, Father Abbot, I haven't.
Well, briefly. He's Hannigan's cousin. He's illegitimate.
Oh, my.
They put him to school with the Benedictines. And as so often happens in such cases, he grew up starved for affection, with nothing going for him but his brains.
I see.
So what we have here is one of your cold intellectuals.
Mm.
He's scarcely 30, yet people are talking about him as the kind of major scientific thinker that only crops up maybe once or twice in 100 years.
I see.
Go on with the letter.
Yes, my lord. He will behave if you are firm, but be careful, my friend. He has a mind like a loaded musket, and he can go off in any direction. There's a postscript. A certain chalice is being filled for me of late, Paolo. Pray God will strengthen me. I doubt it will pass away. I hope that you and the brethren will pray often for Marcus Apollo in his fear and trembling. Farewell in Christ.
I wonder if Hannigan had someone read the letter to him.
If so, my lord, would the letter have been sent?
I suppose not. All right, thanks very much. You better go back to your other duties now.
Yes, Father Abbot.
Several weeks had passed since the arrival of that letter. During those weeks, Abbot Paolo had slept badly, had suffered a recurrence of an old gastric trouble, had brooded on the past, as if something might have been done differently back then to avert this future. What future? There seemed no reason to expect trouble. No signs of turmoil came from the tribes to the north and the east. Imperial Denver was not pressing its attempt to levy taxes on the monastery. The oasis was still furnishing water. No plague among animals or men. The corn was doing well in the irrigated field. There were signs of progress in the world. And yet he felt forebodings. Some nameless threat. The feeling had been gnawing at him, as annoying as a swarm of flies buzzing around one's face in the desert sun. There was a sense of the imminent, coiled like a rattler, ready to strike. What nonsense, old man. When you tire of living, change itself seems evil, does it not?
Do you suppose the buzzards have eaten old Eliezer yet?
Oh.
Paolo looked around, squinted into the twilight.
Hello, hello.
It was Galt.
Father Prior.
His prior. And probable successor.
Eliezer, you mean Benjamin. Why, have you heard something about him lately?
No, but you seem to be looking toward the mesa. I thought you might be wondering about the old Jew. There's a wisp of smoke up there. I guess he's still alive.
We shouldn't have to guess. I'm going to ride over there and pay him a visit.
Oh, you sound like you're leaving tonight.
In a day or two.
I better be careful. They say he throws rocks at climbers.
I haven't seen him for 5 years. And I'm ashamed I haven't. He's lonely.
If he's lonely, why does he insist on living like a hermit?
To escape loneliness in a young world.
That perhaps makes his kind of sense, Domine, but I just don't see it.
Well, you will, when you're my age or his.
Oh! Well, I don't expect to get as old as Benjamin. He lays claim to several thousand years.
And you know, I can't dispute him. I met him when I was just a novice, 50-odd years ago, and I'd swear he looked just as old then as he does now. He must be well over 100.
3,209, so he says. Sometimes even older. I think he believes it, too. An interesting madness.
I'm not so sure he's mad, Father. Just devious in his sanity. Now, what did you want to see me about?
Oh, three small matters. First, how do we get the poet out of the guest house before Don Taddeo arrives? He's due in a few days, and the poet's taken root.
I'll handle the poet. What else?
Vespers. Will you be in the church?
Not until Compline. You take over. What else?
Controversy in the basement in the library over Brother Kornhauer's experiment.
Who and how?
Well, a silly gist of it seems to be Brother Armbruster, the librarian, has the attitude that doomsday will come soon enough without Brother Kornhauer pushing it. While with Brother Kornhauer, it's the dawn of a new age. Kornhauer moves something to make room for a piece of equipment. Armbruster yells perdition.
No.
Brother Kornhauer yells progress. Mm. And they have at each other. Then they come fuming to me to settle it. I scold them for losing their tempers. They get sheepish and fawn over each other for 10 minutes. 6 hours later, boom, and the floor shivers again down in the library. Mm-hmm. I can settle the blow-ups, Dominie, but there seems to be a basic issue.
Breach of conduct, I'd say.
Yes.
What do you want me to do about it? Exclude them from the table?
Not yet, but you might warn them.
All right, I'll track it down. Now, is that all?
That's all, Dominie. By the way, do you think Brother Kornhauer's contraption is going to work?
I hope not.
Then why let him continue?
Because I was curious at first. The work has caused so much commotion by now, though, that I'm sorry I let him start it.
Then why not stop him?
Because I'm hoping he will reduce himself to absurdity without any help from me.
Oh.
Now, if the thing fails, it'll fail just in time for Don Taddeo's arrival. That would be the proper form of mortification for Brother Kornhauer.
I see.
To remind him of his vocation before he begins thinking he was called to religion for the purpose of building a generator of electrical essences.
Oh, but Father Abbott...
Yes?
You'll have to admit it would be quite an achievement if successful.
No. No, I don't have to admit it.
The abbot decided to handle the problem of the poet before the problem of perdition versus progress. The simplest solution to the problem of the poet was for the poet to get out of the guest house and preferably out of the abbey, out of the vicinity of the abbey, out of sight, hearing, and mind. But no one could expect a simplest solution to get rid of the poet. The abbot left the wall and crossed the courtyard. At the guest house, he knocked. No answer. So he tried the door. It opened. Faint red light from a charcoal burner softened the darkness. The room reeked of stale food.
Poet?
He went to the burner, raked up the coals, and lit a splinter of kindling. He transferred the flame to an oil lamp and went to explore the rest of the suite. It would have to be thoroughly scrubbed and fumigated. Also perhaps exorcised before Don Taddeo moved in. In the second room, Paolo suddenly felt as if someone were watching him. He paused and looked slowly around. A single eyeball peered at him from a vase of water on the shelf, the poet's glass eye, which the poet often took out. The abbot nodded at it familiarly and went on to a third room, where he met the goat.
Oh!
It was their first meeting. The goat was standing atop a tall cabinet, munching turnip greens. It had a bald head, a bald, bright blue head.
Poet.
Arrear.
Wake up. You're moving out of here. Huh? Immediately, tonight. Mm. We need the guest house for Don Taddeo. Oh. Dump your stuff in the hall. Let's get this place aired out. Mm. Sleep in the stable boy's cell downstairs if you must. Then come back in the morning and scrub this place up.
Who used these quarters last?
Monsignor Longi. Why?
Oh, well, I wondered who brought the bedbugs. Mm. Don Taddeo can have them. I don't want them. I've been eaten up alive ever since I moved in. I was planning on leaving, but now that you've offered me the stable, well, I'll be happy
I did
to
not
accept
mean...
your hospitality a little longer until my book is finished, of course.
What book? Oh, never mind. Just get your things out of here.
Now?
Now.
Good. I don't think I could stand these bugs another night.
Give me that wine.
Sure. Have some. It's a pleasant vintage.
Thank you, since you stole it from our cellars. Whoa. It happens to be sacramental wine. Did that occur to you?
It hasn't been consecrated.
I'm surprised you thought of that.
I didn't steal it anyway. I got
it. Never mind the wine. Where did you steal the goat?
I didn't steal it.
Oh, it just materialized.
It was a gift, Reverend Decimi.
From whom?
A dear friend, Dominicimi.
Whose dear friend?
Mine, sire.
Oh, now, there's a paradox. Where? Did you...
Benjamin, sire.
You stole it from old Benjamin?
Please, not stole.
Well, then what?
Benjamin insisted I take it as a gift after I composed this sonnet in his honor.
The truth?
Well, I won it from him at Mumbly Peg.
I see.
No, it's true. The old wretch nearly cleaned me out, and then he refused to allow me credit. Well, I had to stake my glass eye against the goat, and I won everything back.
Get the goat out of the abbey.
Oh, it's a marvelous species of goat. The milk is an unearthly odor, and it contains essences. In fact, it's responsible for the old Jew's longevity.
How much of it?
All 5,408 years of it.
I thought he was only 3,200. Oh, never mind. Just get yourself moved out, and tomorrow get the goat back to Benjamin.
But I want it fairly.
We will not discuss this. Take the goat to the stable, then I'll have it returned to him myself.
Why?
We have no use for a goat. Neither have you.
Oh!
What does that mean, pray?
Don Taddeo is coming. There'll be need of a goat. A scapegoat before it's finished. You can be sure of that.
Paolo stomped out of the guest house. Don Taddeo was coming. 12 centuries after the flame deluge, Don Taddeo was coming for the memorabilia. The brethren of Leibowitz had pressed a sort of Veronica's veil to the face of a crucified civilization. It had come away marked with an image of ancient grandeur, but the image was faintly printed, incomplete, hard to understand. But the books could help, Paolo hoped. The books could point out directions and offer hints. It had happened once before. But this time, thought Paolo, we'll remind him of who kept the spark burning while the world slept.
What was that?
He thought he heard a bleat. A sarcastic bleat? From the poet's goat.
Mm-hmm.